They tuck it away and run for it inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode 252. This ain't gonna be pretty. My name is Matthew Turner, alongside Anthony Fitzpatrick, Stephen Collins, Tom Wilkinson, and our guest today is one of the biggest 49ers fans we can find. If you're on YouTube and Twitch, you can see the amazing display cases behind him with the various helmets and signed memorabilia and what have you. He's been on the show several times before, mainly to talk draft, but we're talking NFC Championship game today. It's Nick Ludlam. How are you doing, Nick?
I'm doing really rather well. Thank you very much for having me on, gents.
Really glad to have you back. Fellas, how are you doing? NFC Championship weekend. All I can say is we are not used to this. Has anyone been productive at work this week?
No.
No. I mean, it's just, I'm still at the surreal stage. I'm still at the pinch me, is this actually happening stage?
If you think this week wasn't productive, just wait until Monday.
I mean, it's a case of, like, this time of year, it's like, it's all draft stuff now. And I'm sat here trying to do my draft stuff this year. And I'm like, you know what? No, I'm going back on Twitter and I'm going to wind some 49ers fans up. It's like, we're still in it at this. I can't focus on what I would actually do at this point of year. So, like, it's crazy. Like, we're 2 days away and I just, I'm not used to it.
Yeah, 2 days and 2 hours. I cannot wait. It's going to be absolutely amazing. I'm going to say this at the top of the show, and I realize it's tempting fate, but the amount of places and booking something like this is logistically difficult. So at the top of the show, if you are in the UK and you want to watch the Super Bowl with lots of like-minded Lions fans, if we win on Sunday, it's not happening if we don't win. If we win on Sunday, we are watching the Super Bowl in Birmingham. There is on our website an event, and you can RSVP to it there. I don't believe we have really a maximum booking for this, so we can probably bring hundreds of people if we wanted to. So don't be shy. Bring a friend. Go on RSVP, and hopefully, if we win, we'll see you there. I realise we're tempting fate as a 30% kind of team at the moment, as we are, but 30% more than nil. Hopefully we'll see you there when we win. Anyway, let's get on with some of our usual stuff. Discord channel links are in the chat right now. College Football Podcast, and what are you talking about this week?
This week it was the breakdown of the Shrine Bowl roster. So still in All-Star season, all the All-Star games are happening. I think they're about 2 weeks from now. So me and Ryan did our favourite players from that. Went down them all, and then next week we'll be doing the Senior Bowl because they're all on. But yeah, Shrine Bowl this week, it's good. There's tons of really talented players in there. I know you're only interested in the NFC Championship game, so am I, but in a few weeks we will have to get round to it, so check it out.
Please don't forget to like the episode, sub to the podcast, and rate and review and all that good stuff, because you know how much that means to us as smaller content creators. It really helps boost the algorithm. And go and like our friends at Lions Nation Unite on their Facebook group. That would be grand. We're Twitch affiliated, YouTube monetized. We've got a tip jar down below as well. So if you enjoy listening to and want to show some love that way, that would be fantastic. There's also a feedback form. If you've got any content ideas for the off-season, we'd love to hear from you. That's in the YouTube description. And our merch store is live too. I really need to get around to actually designing some stuff for the historic run we've had, but I haven't got around to it yet. But the link's in the live chat as well. If you want to support the show but get something back, that's a great way of doing that. Let's kick off with some news before we get into the preview. And fellas, Lions executives and coaches are winning some awards. Brad Holmes, Pro Football Writers Association NFL Exec of the Year, and Dan Campbell, 101 Awards NFC Coach of the Year. Dan Campbell's also a finalist for the AP Coach of the Year. Ben Johnson, the AP Assistant Coach of the Year. And Gibbs and LaPorta are up for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Those AP awards are going to be broadcast live during the awards in Super Bowl week. That's February the 8th. But Lions are getting some love nationally, and it's long overdue and I guess to be expected at this point.
Yeah, like this is why we're here after 3 years. It's organizationally the changes that have been made here from GM all the way down through the organization. That's where you've got to start if you want to change everything. And like as GM, it's just, I just love Brad so much. Like to see him get this, he's earned it, because like the situation he inherited when he got here, like he had no money to work with. He had an aging roster that had no talent. He had nothing. And he's just gone and knocked out draft after draft after draft. Because even the good GMs have bad drafts. Like, you know, you can't get them all. And every year, he's got them all. Well, he's got the vast majority of his picks. He's done it the right way. The cap is in an incredibly healthy situation going forward. From the situation he inherited to what we are now, like, he's done the best job over the last 3 years of anybody, period. So he deserves it. The same with Dan. Like, everybody doubted him. Everybody criticized him. You know, this is who they're losing jobs to. And it's like, no, he's the exact perfect fit for here. He's installed his culture. He has trained his players. He's got the right staff together. And he's just inspired everybody and everything. He deserves it. And he should get the main one as well. I know it's just the NFC one at the minute, but like outside of D'Amico Ryans, someone like that, I just can't see anyone who's had the impact that he's had on his team. And yeah, it's just great. It's just awards, it's recognition, rightfully so, to what has made our organization great. So it is wonderful to see it.
And I think Dan obviously gets the press conferences, as you would expect, and has got a lot more media hype over the last year, especially. But what Brad Holmes has done is genuinely incredible. I think it's not even that, it's not even Hutch, it's not even Sewell, guys that you could say other GMs would have taken at that spot. It's the general hit rate is unbelievable. In the draft, and I think that's what's been most impressive, and it's good to see him get his flowers. And also, I'm amazed more of his clips haven't gone viral yet, because obviously it's the Lions fans they have, but some of the celebrations, especially the one in the lift after the wildcard round, was just
the one in the lift reminds me of who was the South Korean guy who went viral for the music video?
Gangnam Style.
Gangnam Style, and yeah, he's dancing around in the lift. Like, that reminds me of Brad Holmes in the lift. It's
if I see Brad Holmes doing Gangnam Style, I might you know, end life there. You'll not see anything better than that. He's like, I said, if we win the Super Bowl, I'm worried that he's going to spontaneously combust and cause a supernova or something like that. His gradual celebrations as the season's gone on have been more extravagant. Like, you remember the Kansas game where he's just running up and down the stands, high-fiving all the Lions fans. And then it's like every week it gets bigger. It's like if he wins the Super Bowl, he may implode. And, you know, we're here for it. It's great. I love his passion and enthusiasm. He broke Dan's rib. Would he break his rib during the draft, or he just bruised him?
Yeah,
he bruised his ribs during the draft because he hit him so hard because he was so pumped. I mean, that's just like the guy he is. I love him to death.
I actually read somewhere this week, I can't remember where I read it, that apparently one of the biggest kind of like in locker room banter arguments is which of Brad's draft classes is the best.
Yeah,
did anyone else read that?
Yeah. Because Salim goes, obviously it's us. I'm like, everyone's like, oh, it's obviously our class. It's funny. Yeah, though.
I mean, the players must know, you know, and I guess that's what's really helped with building the team and building the confidence, is the players know that they're onto a good thing. Particularly like people like Decker, who've been through the, you know, the Matt Patricia years, but or, you know, maybe people that have come from less successful franchises. Imagine saying that a couple of years ago. But, you know, there's obviously, they're not just building something short term. Like, it's not like this is a one-off season. They must know that they're onto a good thing. And that's really going to help us in free agency.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's not just you guys that know this. This is seen outside by other fans of other organizations as well. This isn't a flash in the pan Lions team. This is a good Lions team. It's a young Lions team, and it's only going to improve. They're going to be around the playoffs for a few years to come.
And just to swing round to the 49ers as well, Nick, MVP, you've got two guys up for it. Brock Purdy, of course, the quarterback, but also Christian McCaffrey's up for it as well. McCaffrey's up for Offensive Player of the Year, and you've got Coach of the Year with Kyle Shanahan as well as a finalist. So you've got a load of guys up for awards as well.
We're flying. We're absolutely flying. To me, I was a little bit disappointed not to see John Lynch in there. I think that's probably just 49er bias more than anything. Kyle fully deserves to be one of the main candidates for Coach of the Year. You've mentioned two other great candidates already on the show, but how many coaches have gone out there and got four players with over 1,000 yards this year?
Oh, we were close. We were so close. We were looking at that all year. But yeah, he's done a fantastic job. I think the issue that the 49ers have is when you go to the championship game four times in 5 years, it's almost the expectation, and sometimes awards are breaking expectations. And so the good teams kind of have it against them already there.
That's it. I mean, it's going to be D'Amico, it's going to be Dan Campbell. But either one of them win it, they deserve it. You're talking about two men. Did anyone really expect the Lions to be in this situation at the beginning of the season? Okay, fair. All right, so I'm talking to the wrong crowd here at this point.
I didn't,
for the record. So,
you predicted an NFC Championship game.
I said 14-3, number one seed in 49ers at Detroit in the NFC Championship game. Was my prediction.
You've cheated because you had a bye week. You had a bye week and then you've cheated a bit.
But I said we were going to win 14 games, which we have done. It just took us two more games to get there.
Oh, no, you're not getting away with it. No.
Technicality.
We are not having that. The 12-5 crowd won. The 12-5 crowd won. I'm not having that.
Yeah, no. that's probably fair. But,
Cleet Blakeman will flag that on Sunday. So
this is just a thing that absolutely makes me slightly just weird about this. We've won more games than the 49ers this year.
Well done. Like, you just had to say that, didn't you?
I know, well, it's kind of weird, though, isn't it? Because, right? Yeah, so the 49ers were the number one seed with the same record as us, and we've now played one extra game.
I thought you had one more win than us in a regular season.
No, tiebreakers. No,
tied. Tiebreakers. We had the conference tiebreaker. So that's why we knew going into that final game of the season, there was nothing to play for. Literally. Yeah, yeah. The only thing to play for in that game was how long would we stop Puka Nacua getting his rookie record. That was the only talking point in that game.
Yeah, and they managed to shoehorn him in for it anyway, and then he was out of the game. So never mind, it didn't hurt us. So anyway, let's talk 49ers. The 49ers are 13-5 on the season, and they've had a really interesting season, starting out 5-0, wins against Pittsburgh, at the Rams, versus Giants, versus Arizona, and versus Dallas. So one quality win at that time, because the Rams were not great at that point. And then three losses in a row, at Cleveland, at Minnesota, and versus Cincinnati. But then they got back on board with six straight wins versus at Jacksonville, versus Tampa Bay, at Seattle, at Philadelphia, versus Seattle, and at Arizona, before going 2-2 down the stretch, losing to Baltimore, winning at Washington, losing versus the Rams, and then finally in the divisional round, beating the Green Bay Packers. So it all seemed to come in kind of bursts for the 49ers this season. We'll talk about that in just a second. The betting for this game, Lions are 14-5. That is plus 280. San Francisco is 18-5 on. That is, I can't do the conversion in my head now, but that's minus 270, I think. San Francisco's 7.5-point favourites on the spread. That has gone out from 6.5 to begin with. So San Francisco becoming bigger favourites than to begin with. And the over-under is 51.5 points. That is the same as the Dallas game, which was the highest in the NFL season. So they are expecting points in this game. Injury report has come out as well, but we'll get into that in just a second, I think. Nick, I'll come to you first. The 49ers season has been a bag of ups and downs, some crazy win streaks in there of 5-6 before going 2-2 in the last four.
Yeah, I mean, it all started out 5-0. We were starting already to wonder, could this be an unbeaten season? And we were brought very quickly back down to earth by PJ Walker at Cleveland, which was not fun. In fact, that was the Niners' first ever London meetup. So we were all very drunk in the center of London and nowhere really to go. And it's like, okay, this is good. Never mind. Okay. The losses just kept coming at that point. It was starting to get a bit worrying. The bye week came at a perfect time. Absolutely perfect time. We managed to get some players back. We went to Jacksonville, and that was one of our most more impressive games of the season, which is why I really wasn't worried about having that first round bye in the playoffs, having done so well against Jacksonville. I was actually out for the next game then against the Tampa Bay Bucks. Went out for that one. That game, we seemed to win at a canter. We didn't really have to get out of second or third gear. I was actually quite surprised the Bucks made the playoffs, considering how poor they were against us in Santa Clara. And then you had that mixed bag again, in and out. Christmas was ruined. Thanks, Ravens. That was an absolute blower. That was a real comeback down to earth, because that, I think they're going to beat the Chiefs. They'll be whoever we win. Well, whoever wins from our game is going to end up playing the Ravens, and that is going to be like hell on earth, to be honest. That is not going to be easy. They have a fantastic team.
You're preaching to the choir.
They made it.
Yeah, they blew both of us away.
Mm.
It really they're feels a hell like of a team. We were discussing this on our Discord channel, but it really feels like the only team that can beat Baltimore are Kansas City. That's the most likely team out of the three to win, and that if Kansas City do win, I would put the NFC favourites over Kansas City, but I don't think Baltimore will lose to either NFC team. So it's a really weird situation. I don't know if you agree.
It's an odd... whoever we end up... Sorry, that's a bit harsh, really, considering whose show I'm on. But if the Niners end up making it to the Super Bowl, we would be playing one of the two teams that have beaten us in both of our last Super Bowl appearances. Because the last time, obviously, we got smashed in the last 10 minutes by Patrick Mahomes, having been 10 points up. And the one before that would have been one of the worst evenings of my life, when we got beaten by the Ravens in the Harbaugh Bowl. It's one way, revenge. I'm just praying for it either way.
Boys, I'm going to go through the injury report and then the depth chart for the 49ers, and then we'll talk about the teams. So the Lions have brought out their injury report already. We're still waiting on the 49ers at the moment. Jonah Jackson and Khalif Raymond are out of this game, so no starting left guard. Kaodi Awashika is primed and ready to go. Can he keep it to less than 10 pressures? He is hoping. Otherwise, Raymond is obviously still a big miss. He's missed 3 games in a row now. Hopefully he can come back in time for the Super Bowl if we get there, but let's see. Hendon Hooker is questionable with a tooth injury. How? I don't understand, but never mind. Otherwise, Chase Lucas is also questionable. He did not practice on Thursday with an illness and was limited today with the same problem. Otherwise, everyone's ready to go, including Anzalone, Houston, LaPorta, Ragnow, and Reynolds. They should all be active. For the 49ers, we're still waiting on them. The big question is with Deebo Samuel. He obviously had his shoulder injury last week. He didn't practice Wednesday. He was limited on Thursday, so obviously trending in the right direction, but remains to be seen what happened today. Other people who've been carrying injuries up to this is Eric Armstead, Dre Greenlaw, George Odom, Ambry Thomas, and Kala Davis. They were all full practice on Thursday, so no issues expected there. And otherwise, Nick Bosa and Trent Williams have been rested on Wednesday, but they'll be absolutely fine.
Bad days.
I actually haven't really looked at whether anyone has been injured on San Francisco's team so far.
We did have one enter IR recently, and that's why Khalil Davis has been reactivated to the full-time roster.
There we go. Otherwise, so the notable people I can see, Drake Jackson and Huafanga is the biggest. But there we go. Right, depth chart for San Francisco. Obviously, Brock Purdy's quarterback one. He's up for MVP. Apart from one game, he's had an absolute hell of a season for the Mr. Irrelevant that seems like such a long time ago. Sam Darnold's QB2 and Brandon Allen QB3. Running backs, obviously a fantastic stable, but headed by the best of them all, Christian McCaffrey. Elijah Mitchell behind him and Jordan Mason at running back 3. Wide receivers, this could be the best group in the NFL, potentially. Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, Ray McCloud, Chris Conley, and Ronnie Bell. Tight ends, you got George Kittle, followed up by Charlie Werner and Braden Willis. And don't overlook Kyle Juszczyk as well. Fullback, starting five offensive linemen, Trent Williams, Aaron Banks, Jake Brendel, Spencer Burford, and Colton McKivitz. Backing them up, Jalen Moore, John Feliciano, Matt Pryor, and Ben Bartsch. And then on defense...
Feliciano will start.
Aha, thank you.
He's starting all year.
Why is ESPN letting me down?
Screw He's had a hell of a season, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw him on in the Green Bay game, so I probably should have tweaked there as we have just dropped the stream a little bit. There we go. We're back. Okay, starting defense. Four down linemen are Chase Young, Eric Armstead, Javon Hargrave, and Nick Bosa. They're backed up by Sebastian Joseph Day, Javon Kinlaw, and Randy Gregory, with Kevin Givens, Robert Beal Jr., and Isaac Alarcon. I will say, backing them up. The linebackers are Dre Greenlaw, Fred Warne, and Oren Burks, backed up by Dee Winters, Demetrius Flanagan Fowles, and if he's not Irish with a name like Flanagan, what are you doing? And Jalen Graham. Then the back four, the DBs, Treverius Ward and Demador Lemoir. Lenore? He's called Lenore, isn't he? Yeah. Even though the Demo. Spelling of that name is wrong.
You are butchering these names.
Go with Demo. Yes. Demo Lenore.
Ambry Thomas also plays the majority of the snaps at cornerback, even though he's listed as a backup. They're backed up by Isaiah Oliver, Daryl Luther Jr., and Samuel Womack III. And the safeties, Jair Brown and Tayshon Gibson Sr., backed up by Logan Ryan and George Odom. The kicker is Jake Moody, who we know well. The punter is Mitch Wachowski, and the punt return, kick return is Ray McLeod. The long snapper is Tabor Pepper. And I'll come to you first. This 49ers team, it is particularly strong and it has a good amount of depth.
Why me first? You know. Anyhow, I feel like I have to explain this to Nick first. I'm like the scrappy-do of this. I'm the one who'll make the big fighting comments and stuff like that. So don't take any of this personally. But yeah, this is a very highly skilled team we're coming against. You know, I see a lot of them in us. You know, it's kind of similar. You dominate the trenches. You start on your offensive line. You start on your defensive line. You build from there. You've got playmakers all over the field on offense. You've got guys who can take games over on defense. We've just been fierce for years, and it doesn't seem to matter who they've had as DC. It's just always been really damn good, full of guys on there. So it's going to be the hardest game of the year for us, without a shadow of a doubt. And, like, we're going to have to play the game of our lives to come out of this and be able to win it. But yeah, you do have to admire them. And like you say, the depth there is really good. The only thing I would say about it is, you know, a lot of these guys have been here before. And we mentioned the point that, you know, three NFC championship games in 4 years, not won a Super Bowl. Like, they've gotten to this point before and looked really good and then have not been able to take that step forward on there. So, you know, it's a very good team, but can it sort of get over that hump? You know, us, we're under no pressure for this. We are, it just feels like there's a touch of destiny about us at the minute. I think there is an in there with it. They've not shown they can do it, but it really matters when you get here. So it's an incredibly talented team, but it's vulnerable when it reaches this stage. That's why I look at it and how I see it.
Steve?
And it's...
Oh, sorry. Go, Tom.
No, I was just going to say, I think the Lions to this point in the season, we obviously have some up-and-coming stars maybe, but feels like a team which is greater than the sum of its parts. You look at the Niners lineup and you just really struggle to see question marks. And I think really in every team in the NFL, you can see that to some extent. And with the Niners, you can't. So when you do see some of the games, obviously, and I'd be lying if I said I won't. Some of the games that have happened, not so much the Ravens, I almost struggle to understand how teams are beating you to some extent. And obviously how you run the ball and that scheme is fantastic. In general, that matches up quite nicely with us, I would say. I'd say what's interesting, and Nick, I'm sure we'll come to this during, is how well you've protected Brock Purdy. Now, that isn't necessarily something which is a strength of this current Lions team in terms of getting after the quarterback. So it's tough as we sit here now to try and poke holes in that Niners roster. And even to your point, and even the depth, if guys go down and you've got next man up, I mean, there's talent the whole way through that roster.
Steve, how are you feeling about the Niners team?
I think at this point in the season, it's kind of pointless talking about strength of offensive unit, defensive unit, because, you know, you can't get to this stage of the season with like a crap unit on either side of the ball. And even
Tampa Bay got here last week. Sorry. Never mind.
Even our defense, which has been poor at times and statistically isn't good, like has had the ability to step up. So for me, this is all about like man to man matchups. And I think because of the strength of our run defense, that's our one like in to the Niners. So for me, it's all about Brock Purdy, because if we can win some matchups in the trenches and get to Purdy, then I'm not sure that the Niners' normal kind of like steamroller run offense will do as much damage. So for me, that's kind of like the key matchup. Like, can Hutchinson, can Pascal, I'm not sure if James Houston's going to be fit, but can someone like penetrate that line and really get to Purdy? Because, you know, Purdy, that he's probably the chink in the armor. And I'm not saying he's a bad quarterback and he's played incredibly well, but he does have some limitations. And that's probably our one hope, I guess.
Nick, let me frame this question to you a slightly different way. In the last 5 years, of which you've been to NFC Championship games every year, apart from one?
Near enough.
Is this the best iteration of your team?
100%. 100%. You've only got to look at the stats they've been putting up. Even when we didn't play particularly well against Green Bay were probably the better team for large chunks of that game last week. When it mattered, Brock Purdy went down the field and he led the team to a victory, and the defense stepped up. It wasn't one of our megastars that is touted as all pro, doesn't get a lot of attention. Dre Greenlaw steps up, two interceptions. The entire defensive unit limits Jordan Love on the final four drives. He had 12 passing attempts, only completed six. 30 yards, two interceptions, no touchdowns, and that's us playing badly. This is a hell of a defense. The only way I see us losing this game is through the run game, because our run defense really should be very good with Javon Hargrave and Arik Armstead in the middle. It should be really good, and it's not. It's been poor. It's been poor at best. Teams have run on us for fun, and we're up against the best running back tandem in the league. We've got CMC.
Aaron Jones had a really good game against you. Aaron Jones, he did. Really showed up some of the holes. Yeah.
He did. That's there to be exploited all the way. I mean, as far as obviously you've got your run defense, the interesting thing will be to see how well that Lions defensive line can shift side to side when it comes to those motions, when you've got those end arounds. Because even if Debo doesn't play a great deal of snaps, just having him on the line is going to force your linebackers forward. It's going to force all of your corners, your safeties, towards the ball, because you never know what Debo's going to do, which is just going to open it up long. You've got Brandon Ayuk, who very quietly has had an absolutely phenomenal season, ranked 30th for targets of all wide receivers. He's ranked 7th for yards. He is an absolute beast. Some guy tried to cheap shot him against Green Bay. Guy ended up on the floor without even realizing it. He's absolutely pancaked someone. This team is phenomenal. It can beat you a number of ways. Brock has been hit so hard with this, he can't throw the deep ball. But yet, Brock Purdy has one of the best conversion rates of ball thrown over 20 yards.
Yeah, completely.
I don't see that limitation myself personally. Of course, I've watched him every week. But, you know, we do get a lot of yak yards. Of course, that's always going to play into these things. But at the end of the day, stop it.
Brandon Ayuk, of course, the only active wide receiver in these playoffs now who is higher rated by PFF than Amon-Ra St. Brown. The only one left. Amon-Ra fourth, Ayuk second in the NFL. So that tells you everything you need to know about him, really. Let's get on to this offense and just give you some overall stats first. This is PFF's number one team overall, 96.2 grade. The number one offense with a 90.5 and the number two defense with an 89.9. DVOA has this as the second overall team, first on offense and fourth on defense. Brock Purdy, really great year for him. 308 completions on 444 attempts, 69.4 completion rate percentage, 4,280 yards, 31 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, passer rating on the year of 113, which I think is number one in the NFL. Correct me if I'm wrong, Nick. Do you know?
I don't know if anyone's any higher. I must be honest.
Above 110 on an entire season is just outrageous. Oh, and a QBR of 72.8, PFF grade of 86.7. Christian McCaffrey has had a season for the ages. 272 carries, 1,459 yards, 5.4 yards per attempt, 14 touchdowns. And through the air, 67 catches on 83 targets, 564 yards and 7 touchdowns for 21 total. PFF grade of 90.4 doesn't lead to the team, though, because Brandon Ayuk has 75 catches on 105 targets, 1,342 yards and 7 touchdowns. His PFF grade is 91.9, which is number one on the team. Deebo Samuel, though, don't forget about him. 37 carries for 225 yards and 6.1 yards per attempt for 5 touchdowns on the ground. And then 60 catches on 89 targets for 892 yards and 7 touchdowns through the air. PFF grade 83.9 for him. Kittle's still probably the best all-around tight end in the NFL out there. Lions fans may disagree, but this is a great matchup if you like tight ends. 65 catches on 90 targets, 1,020 yards, 6 touchdowns, and a PFF grade of 86.9. Other good grades in there. Left tackle Trent Williams, the best left tackle in football, 90.5 grade on the year. And John Feliciano, the guard, who you said is definitely starting, he's up there with an 82.9 grade on the season, which is insane. Other bad grades in there, Aaron Banks, the guard, 54.9. I'm guessing, is Feliciano the left guard and Banks doesn't start?
There's been a little bit of chopping and changing because of injuries. So they've been in and out and this and that. But I wouldn't be surprised if you saw four players lining up towards in the middle, depending on what happens.
Fair enough. The fullback Carl Juszczyk is a 53.8, but I feel like fullbacks always get slammed on PFF, so don't bear that anymore. And Spencer Burford, the other guard, 50.6. This team on offense, fourth on third down, 14th on fourth down, but they've only gone for it 13 times on the season. And in the red zone, they are the number one team in the NFL. 45 touchdowns on 67 trips. That's 67.2%. I will stop speaking at this point. But Tom, I'll come to you first this time. Offensively, they're a juggernaut. Ayuk, number two wide receiver in football with Tyreek Hill, number one. Samuel is insane. Kittle and CMC, probably the offensive player of the year. And Purdy is still in with a shot of MVP. And behind Trent Williams, who's the best left tackle in football. I mean, what do you do? And Carl Juszczyk's there as well.
Yeah, and I actually just looked up there as you said it, and there's only one fullback rated above 60 on PFF, the average grade. Shows you what PFF thinks of fullbacks overall. Anyway, it's almost what you said earlier when we were talking a little bit offline about coach of the year and everything Shanahan's done. It's a bit of victim of your own success because everyone just looks at what McCaffrey's done this year and is like, yeah, he's a great player. What Kittle's done this year, yeah, great player. And it's almost we don't celebrate how incredible some of these seasons are. I think Ayuk in general has taken a leap that I wasn't necessarily expecting, and that's something to be shouted about. Purdy's always going to be a storyline, at least for the next couple of years, until everyone gets comfortable with what he is, what he isn't. But there's just so much talent and so much consistent talent, I guess, over the last few years. I know McCaffrey has only been with you for a couple of seasons, but just really good players. And again, this comes back to it's hard to find holes in this team. And I think back to your earlier point, Nick, of where I guess the only way you can see this game going against the 49ers, and a lot of it does have to come down to game script too, right? Which is, we'll come on to talk about your defense, but I struggle to see a world where this offense isn't going to score points and isn't going to cause problems. So unless the Lions are going to win on offense as well and actually start to control the clock, control the game script, it's really tough to see a world that this offense goes completely off the ball. There's too much talent. And again, I think we can all say that we are huge Penei Sewell fans on this podcast, I'm sure in the chat as well. I really struggle at this stage in his career to see an argument that Trent Williams isn't an even better player than Penei Sewell at this stage. That's not to say Penei Sewell hasn't had an incredible season. He obviously has. It's not to say he's probably the kind of bright, shining star of offensive line play moving forward. But Trent Williams is and has been on almost an entirely different level to everyone else in the game the last 3 years to maybe 5 years. So there's a lot of talent. It obviously doesn't match up brilliantly with us. When we were talking earlier around that Shanahan run game, the most important player on this defense is Aiden Hutchinson. But for me, the second most important player, let's say, is Alex Anzalone. For this week in particular, if we don't control that run game and our linebackers don't flow to the ball correctly, we don't bite on all those motions we're going to see, we're going to get carved up. And we cannot allow that to happen. So there's a lot of talent on that offense. It's going to be a real challenge for AG, who's seen a lot of turnaround in his public opinion over the last 4 weeks or so. But yeah, it's tough to find ways to try and slow this offense down.
Steve, this offense, I know that you were talking about matchups in particular, but just on a fundamental level, it's a difficult offense to try and break down.
Absolutely, but I think we've got to look back at the 49ers, where they've kind of come and stuck this season. And I mean, you know, obviously they lost that game to the Ravens, and we know the Ravens probably the strongest team in the whole NFL, but they only put up 17 points against the Browns, the Vikings, and the Bengals. So I guess for the Lions tape room, it's looking really hard at where those teams were able to stop them, and I'm sure that's what they've been doing all week.
Just injured Trent Williams, and we're absolutely gold. Kirby, where are you?
Swearing.
What's your insight on that, Nick? Like, where, when you had that sort of real sticky patch, where was it that the offense was breaking down?
It wasn't just the offense. That was a total team breakdown, because the defense wasn't getting the stops. The offense wasn't converting on third down. They were being held, and they were being held long. They were being held short. They didn't seem to be a specific scenario that you could really zone in on. It was. I don't want to say it's tiredness, because that's an excuse. It can't be. This is the NFL. You cannot be tired at any point in the season, regardless.
Yeah, not in week six.
It was a team breakdown. It was a team breakdown, and it just went to hell. I say, I mean, PJ Walker was the man that beat our winning streak. You know, our winning streak at that point. It was ridiculous, really. You're looking at a quarterback that came out of the XFL.
Yeah. And I just want to come on specifically to a player who's going to be difficult to match up for us in this game on offense, because the Lions have always struggled against tight ends. It's something that we've never seemed to get over. And, I mean, for Kittle, and I don't know if this was just me, but Kittle's last three seasons before this one, he's had 634 yards, 910 yards, 765 yards. He's had a recent career plagued by injury, and his play seemed to suffer a little bit. And I think at the start of this season, he was banged up a little bit and a bit slow to start. But the last, you know, the second half of the season, say, he's been an absolute menace. And how, I don't know what the Lions do against George Kittle.
Put Kirby on him. Like, I mean, without making... But no, in all due seriousness, like, I don't feel like it's been as big of a problem with us recently. We've been giving up yards to the receivers. We've not been giving up yards to tight ends. Like, Hop didn't really do that much. I know we've had guys go out injured against us, but even like with Tampa, their tight ends didn't really do anything. So Kittle's just... He's just a different fish, though. He's not a tight end, is he? Well, he is, but... He's one of the best receiving threats in the entire division. I don't think there is a lot. It's like with guys like Mike Evans and Justin Jefferson and that, you have to try and contain them enough to be able to keep their impact on the game low. And you've just got to disrupt that 49ers offense. You know, you've just got to stop them getting into a flow, because if you do that, like, that is when you can win games against them. And then that's the key for us, because, again, I know this is its own team this year, but you look back to the last two iterations of the championship they've been to, they've put up 24 points in two games. Like, last year, the Eagles knocked Purdy out, and everything collapsed around them. Even with CMC, everything collapsed around it. And you just take one cog out of Shanahan's system, and it breaks. The Rams did it. Passed a load on them. They both won time of possession big time. It was 38 minutes and 36 minutes. You're getting 10, 12 minutes on the field more than them. You wear that defense down. The Packers did it in the divisional game. First drive was what? 8 minutes? Put points on the board. That is how you do it. And then you just slowly take that offense apart. They've come up against two really good defensive lines in the last two NFC Championship games, and the offense hasn't done it. And that's what I mean. When you keep getting to this stage and you can't take a step further, teams figure something out by this point as how you can go out and do it. So with us, our D-line's in the form of its life at the minute. Every one of them. Aiden he's playing hotter than Nick Bosa right now. And that is, you know, that's a fact. That is not me being biased. He is out there. Aleem's playing well. The entire line is doing its job. If it can stop the run, pull that little cog out the system, then, you know, we've got a chance of being able to do this. Man for man, we can match up. So, yeah, they're going to hit us. Kittle's going to hit us. Samuel's going to hit us. But we've given up so much yardage. Our red zone defense is great. It's been really good recently. You keep them to field goals. You turn over on downs. That's how you do it. But the 49ers have shown weaknesses in these games before. And it matches up for us.
Nick.
And I think, just going back to that, you said about where we're giving up yards. We're not giving up yards to running backs or tight ends or even to receivers as a group. We're giving up yards to a wide receiver one. I think we gave up 600 yards in 3 weeks to Puka Nacua, Justin Jefferson, and
Mike Evans.
CeeDee Lamb. So it was specifically the wide receiver one that had those big games. And for me, it's all about how we scheme our safeties. And I think having CJ Gardner-Johnson back is a massive boost just in terms of awareness on the field so that we can get some double teams where we need to. Because, you know, in that sort of 3-4 week period, we were just letting our wide receiver ones burn us.
Blitzing the safeties has killed Tampa. Like, that destroyed them and overwhelmed. And that's how you do it. You overwhelm. Just go for where you're strongest. And, you know, like, most of our sacks came from the safeties against Tampa. That's how you do it. Overload, disrupt, and work that way. And that's kind of what you've got to be aggressive against these guys. You can't sit back and let them get into a stride and hit you. Otherwise, they will just methodically take you to pieces. As Dan said, give a little, take a lot. And that's his method. He will give a little, but he will take a chunk with you in doing so. And we will give up plays. That is just the unfortunate nature of it. They are going to hit some big chunks on us, but, you know, there's a reason behind it.
This leads me on quite nicely, Nick, to what I was going to talk about in terms of bringing pressure and what Purdy does. You spoke about Purdy being great into pressure earlier. And I've watched the last seven games of the 49ers have played. And the one thing that comes out of it is that, as you said about the 20-yard completions plus, Purdy's exceptionally good. His timing is impeccable. He seems to hit everyone in stride. When you were scoring touchdowns, it always seemed to be that Purdy was hitting a guy who just kind of beaten someone for maybe only a couple of yards over the top, but that he was delivering it so pinpoint that they weren't losing a step when catching the ball and could just accelerate away. Or even if it's just a slant, it's just perfectly placed. The thing about the MVP conversation is that maybe he isn't doing the rushing threat of Lamar as well as the arm. But frankly, I think he's been the best passer in this NFL season. And I don't think it's been that close.
I'd go with that. Let's be honest, the Ravens game killed his MVP chances. CMC isn't the far more likely option, but let's be honest, the guy's a running back. The last guy to win a running, was it the last guy was like 2,000 plus yards, 20 odd touchdowns. He's not even close to that. He isn't going to win it. It's Lamar's pretty much sewn up at this point. But I wouldn't ever worry about Brock Purdy under pressure, ever. Brock can do it. He did it. I was there for Brock's first ever snaps in the NFL. I watched them from the stands. I remember Jimmy going down. And it was like, oh, that's it. Done. We're going to Mr. Irrelevant. This is over. But since day one, he has come in. He has shown he can extend plays with his legs when he needs to. Doesn't have to very often, but he can. Yeah, of course, like any quarterback, if you hit him, of course, they're going to go down. But he doesn't crumble. He doesn't crumble at all. I mean, like you said, the last game against Green Bay, We were terrible. But he still went on a game-winning drive and won the game. The boy stays calm. Everything just washes over him.
We have the same problem with Goff. So, like, everyone just the lazy argument, oh, yeah, he's no good under pressure. But actually, you know, he's evolved from that Rams, you know, quarterback who they all know from a few years ago. He's statistically, again, one of the best guys under pressure in the NFL. But people just still parrot that line. So I just don't think they understand. And I think it's the same with Purdy. A lot of people just think, oh, it's an easy thing to, like, level at him without actually really looking.
Yeah, this is it.
It is also something that's easily put towards just the individual in terms of just the quarterback, when actually the scheme that both these quarterbacks operate in is designed to put so much strain on the defense. And obviously, by definition, if you are blitzing guys, especially from the secondary, you're leaving yourself vulnerable. And the way that these schemes both use motion early to put strain, if you know that you've got a DB coming off one side, and you're the DB on the other side, you're under a lot of pressure because you understand what you're having to do. And that's what the Shanahan scheme and ultimately what Ben Johnson in a different way does as well, is to create those matchups. Actually, it can make you look, and this is taking nothing away from Purdy or Goff for the matter, but as in, it's when you have something schemed up to the way that both these coordinators do, it does make it much easier for that quarterback, because as long as the first and second read, but definitely the first read, if one of those two is open, there's a good chance the ball's going to come out. And the whole design of all the pre-snap motion is to create those matchups, right?
Did you have anything more to come on then, Nick? Because I think...
There was one thing. I mean, I know you say about George's production. I'm not even... Again, this is something that becomes a bit of a weird one, because you're looking at a tight end that gains childlike joy from destroying defensive ends. It is pure joy. You can see it in his face. He's got the close-ups, and he's practically wetting himself with laughter on the field after he's pancaked at someone. He is happy to go and sit next to the tackles for an entire game and not catch a single pass. He's one of the most unselfish players you can possibly imagine for a man as talented as he is in the receiving game. He loves hitting those blocks. They breed them differently up in Iowa. They do something there that they love it. And he will hit those blocks all day long. He is like having a sixth lineman right there in front of it. When you've got the plays, when Juice is coming in as well, that's a seventh. The man's, you know, he can hit those blocks as well as anyone. But I'm not worried if George doesn't get a single catch that day, because you know he's had a lot of fun in the trenches.
Right, let's move this over to the defense. The leading tackler for the 49ers is the linebacker Fred Warner. Four interceptions for him on the year, 11 passes defended and four forced fumbles. 2.5 sacks, 132 tackles, 6 tackles for a loss, 5 quarterback hits and a PFF grade of 90.3. But he's not first on the team. That's Nick Bosa, the leading sack master. 2 passes defended, 7 sacks. Is that right, the leading sack person? With 7? Wow. You share them out. Pretty low. 44 tackles, 8 tackles for a loss, 14 quarterback hits, and a PFF grade of 92.5. I can never say his name. So, Javarius Ward, he's the leading interceptor with 5. He's also got a touchdown, 23 passes defended, a forced fumble, 72 tackles, 2 tackles for a loss, and a PFF grade of 82.2. And don't forget Lenore as well on the other side. 3 interceptions, 10 passes defended, 84 tackles, a tackle for a loss, and a PFF grade of 74.3. Other good grades in there: Eric Armstead with 81.4, Jair Brown 77.9, Javon Hargrave 74, Dre Greenlaw 73, and Trey Gibson 72. Some worst grades in there are backup defensive tackles Givens and Kinlaw with 56.6 and 52.7 respectively. And yet, despite all of those lovely, flashy, nice, high PFF grades, when it comes to efficiency in the downs that matter, on third down, the 49ers are 24th. On fourth down, they're 15th. And in the red zone, they are 16th. And I'm going to come straight to Nick. This defense is fantastic. You'd spoken about that earlier. It creates havoc. And yet, defending the run seems to be a problem. And that really seems to hurt you when things matter most.
Huge. Yeah, it's an enormous problem. absolutely enormous, and it shouldn't be. It really shouldn't be. Eric Armstead has come through since we traded Forrest Buckner to the Colts. The fan base was up in arms. We traded the wrong player. Eric's this, whatever. But Eric Armstead has proved himself to be one of the best run stuffers in the game since then. But this year, it hasn't happened. Now, he's just coming off of a nasty foot injury, which seems to be lingering. It is and it isn't apparently part of a long-standing issue that's been a couple of years. Then you go and add Javon Hargrave from the Eagles. That run game really shouldn't be troubling us the way that it is. And it has. We've been awful against the run. You pointed out already, Jones ran all over us. You know, you looking at the Cleveland Browns running back, I can't remember who it was that day. I think it might have been Kareem Hunt, ran all over us. You know, this isn't an isolated issue. That's where my concern lies. When you're going up against one of the best running back tandems in the league, that is going to be tough. I do expect the Lions to be fairly run heavy throughout the course of the game, particularly early on, looking to open up Amon-Ra St. Brown. It's going to be tough. I mean, Ward hasn't done this very often, but I kind of expect him sticking to St. Brown very tightly. He has, on the odd occasion, followed that WR1 and locked him down. He's obviously done well. He's an All-Pro, first-team All-Pro. You don't get those nods without being a great player. But it is concerning on that run game. It's a really big concern, even not just for this game, potentially for a Super Bowl against the two best running quarterbacks in the league. That's an enormous concern for us. But they're getting pressures. Like you say, the sacks, they haven't been translating at all this year. They just haven't. Nick Bosa held out in the offseason, getting his new contract sorted. He did have a bit of a slow start, but then he is getting pressure. He is there. He's affecting the quarterback. He's forcing the quarterback outside the pocket. When you look at when Green Bay broke down entirely last week, it was because they were forcing Love outside the pocket to make these errant throws. And lo and behold, Dre Greenlaw comes up, as well as Fred Warner. I will hear nothing else. Fred Warner is the best linebacker in football. There is nobody even close. It is just ridiculous. That man can play in coverage. He hits those gaps in the center, and he is an absolute beast. Players go backwards every time, no matter how big they are. But Dre has come up absolute trumps for us. I know I've never screamed for one of my own players to go down so much as I did last week. Honestly, I think my neighbors might be worried I might be in a relationship with a man called Dre. But...
Oh, I love
there's
that.
Serious concerns about the defense.
The running back who gave you the most trouble against the Browns was, as is pointed out in the chat by Grandizer, is Jerome Ford.
There you go, Jerome. I knew
and Kareem Hunt had 47 yards, but Ford had 84. Steve, going to pivot a little bit here, because you've talked about the run defense already for the 49ers, but the Lions... More often than not, while the run game has been a really effective part of what they've done, the Lions have often won games with the passing attack. It's been a top five unit for the last couple of years. And you're talking about one of the best pass defenses in football. If you have a look at how they are in coverage with Warner and Ward and Lenore and, you know, everyone back there, it seems to be just that they're incredibly sticky in coverage. And the Lions are going to have trouble moving the ball in the air, potentially. Or are they? Do you agree?
I think not. As you know, I've been sort of fairly down on our defense for most of the season. But I think what's become apparent is that our offense, there's just so many options for Goff. Because you've obviously got, as Nick was saying, I mean, David Montgomery has been a revelation. I was quite skeptical when we signed him. And he seems to have transformed into a completely different player, someone that's got like an extra gear in him. And obviously Gibbs is just so dangerous. Once he gets into stride, we've seen what he can do to opposing sort of safeties and linebackers. But then you've also got Laporta, who's obviously had like a record setting year, St. Brown, who's just an absolute stud. And then you've got people like Josh Reynolds, who can just come out of nowhere and, you know, score vital points or make receptions. And you've got, you know, Jameson Williams, who is the kind of wild card who we've just seen is getting better and better and better. and can, you know, take the top off any defense. So think of all those options. And we've got the trick plays. And I'm not sure whether Zach Ertz will get a start, but, you know, I'm sure they're dreaming up some, they're scheming up some little fancy plays for him to you know, pull off when we need to. So for me, that's like a really big weaponry. And my main concern is just keeping the pocket clean for Goff. And with our O-line being down Jonah Jackson and Ragnar slightly banged, I mean, Ragnar's always banged up, but, you know, he's obviously carrying injuries. For me, it's all about if we can keep the pocket clean for Goff, I think we're more than a match for the Niners secondary. I don't know if, Nick, you've been watching tape or watching some of our games and have got a similar impression, or whether I'm like over egging it.
No, this is going to be a hell of a game. I mean, you take away our games against Philly and the Cowboys. Other than that, we haven't blown anyone else away, really. We've always done enough to win. And that seems to have been about it. And that's kind of what I'm actually expecting to happen now on Sunday. I don't think this is going to be a blowout in any way, shape or form. This is going to be a close game. The points total over every day, but it's going to be less than 5 points that wins this game. This is going to be a real proper slobber knocker. You've got two fantastic running teams that can open up a defense and then hit you with that amazing pass. You've got Amon-Ra Brown is a fabulous, fabulous wide receiver. He's become something else. I've really enjoyed watching him. I have issues with Jared Goff, but they're pure bias. They are. He's an ex-Rams quarterback. He's also an ex-Cal quarterback. I'm not a fan of Cal. I am a Stanford fan. So they're heavy biases. I will admit that. But it's going to be a hell of a game. This is going to be tight. And we know full well everyone wants us to lose. Everyone is going to want the Lions to win. You know, the build-up is going to be all about that. None of that is going to matter on Sunday, because you are going to have a very, very, very loud Levi Stadium that is going to be urging that team on. We had that heartache of having to play more than half a game of football without a quarterback last year. You know, Brock came in practically out of the goodness of his heart. The man could hardly move his right arm. He could not throw in any way, shape, or form. There's a soundbite of George going up to him going, "Can you throw with your left? Please."
Oh, man.
It was the game was dead the moment Josh Johnson went in. And then when he went down with a concussion, it's like, oh, God, this could get nasty. This could be 30, 40 points if it's not careful. So I'm not too worried about that. They're going to... It's motivation to make sure it doesn't happen again. And I think when it comes down to it, like I say, it'll be a close game, but the Niners will just have too much.
Who are you most worried about on our offense then, Nick? Who's the player that kind of like Gibbs. Scares you?
Gibbs. Yeah. That man's got, he's got pace. He's got that horrible little knack of finding holes. And there's a few holes in our defensive line at the moment. So that's where my concern is. You know, our linebackers are going to have to play the game of their lives. They're going to have to be hitting those A-gaps real hard, real hard. Hit him hard, hit him fast. Make sure that those two running backs are swapping often. No one's getting into a rhythm at all in any way. And then at that point, then you're going to need, I don't know, maybe a cheeky little safety rush every now and again. I'd imagine Jair Brown is probably going to start this time. A rookie who's come on a treat, actually, since... Hufanga went down, and something's going to have to come around the edge just to try and force Goff out, make a bad throw, anything that Tre'Varius Ward, because that ball's probably going to be aimed towards St. Brown. That's why I want Ward on St. Brown with those sticky hands coming down with the ball. It's going to be one mistake.
And just coming back to this defense, I don't know that the Lions have played a team when it comes to passing downs that play such good complementary football, because the pass rush and the coverage kind of equal each other. You know, the rundowns speak for themselves, and we've spoken about that. But when it comes to third and long, which the Lions may find themselves in, we hope not, but you never know, that This is an incredibly dangerous team in coverage, and the pass rush gets there and forces bad throws. And we know from the last few weeks that Goff has maybe a bad play in him again, with the chuck away under pressure and the end zone pick that should have been last week.
First up, big props to the Stanford Cardinals fan. Elik Ayamano is going to be a hell of a receiver in the NFL in a few years. Yes. He's absolutely tremendous. I love him already. As for this 49ers defense, we know what it is. The defensive line creates havoc, causes pressure, makes lots of errant throws, creates opportunities for the linebackers, the secondaries to make plays, to get takeaways. And, you know, it's one of the most effective systems you can roll out there, and you've got to keep them out your backfield. They love to blitz. They love to bring the pressure on you. So with them, there's one way to beat them. Like, there's one common denominating feature every time they lose games. They lose time of possession. You've got to gas them. You've got to make them fight really hard. You've got to wear them down, ground and pound, the good old-fashioned way. But the great part is you can throw on them. Like, Kirko Chains put 400 on them this year. Who did he do it with? He did it with Addison and Hockenson. Your slot receiver, your tight end. Hit the middle of the field, get those passes, bypass your pass rush, get the offense going. We have these next-level players who are able to do that. We have these similar sort of weapons, so it can be done. And if Minnesota can hang up to that pass rush, we can as well. But you've got to put yourself in favorable positions to get in there to begin with. We know Vikings usually run the ball pretty well, but it's susceptible. But you've got to wear them down. Like, that's the thing with them. There's too many good players on there to just go out and outright beat them on the day. You've just got to keep banging away. Start to tire them, start to get them having to rotate some of the other guys in, and then you go after them. But we're an incredibly dynamic offense. Like, I know the thing that's been mentioned is about Gibbs running outside the tackles. They're not good at defending runs outside the tackles, like, statistically. We can hit them there. You can hit them through the middle. We've got all these playmakers in areas where, as I say, there's advantages to be had. Doesn't matter if you beat them with the run or the pass, because you can kind of do it a little bit both. You just got to win that clock. If you win the clock, your chances of winning the game go up tremendously. So the Lions offense just has to get a little creative, not put itself in bad situations. And I think we did a good job against the Bucs. The Bucs is similar. Their front seven is always tremendous. That's why they're in the playoffs. The front seven does. And for the most part, we kept ourselves in good situations and we figured it out, really, because we tried to pass a lot to start with because they've got a really good run defense. Didn't really work. We moved to the run, what we do good. We seem to be able to adjust. We seem to be able to find a weakness in there. So, yeah, it's an elite unit, but it's vulnerable as well. Like I say, you keep it out there. You keep pounding away at it and cracks will appear. And that's what our offense is good at. It's finding cracks in opposition defenses and exploiting them. And we got a lot of players to do so. So, yeah, it's going to be a hella tough game. If you break that defense, you can win. That's how they do it. The defense wins it. So, yeah, it's going to be huge for us.
In that Vikings game, Cousins threw for 380 yards without any discernible rushing attack. So, you know, that's our upside.
Yeah, and I say it's slot receivers, tight ends, that's where your weakness comes in. They found a way to exploit something in that. They found a way to get it done.
And that was without Justin Jefferson in that game. He didn't play.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins, he got it out fast. He got it out real fast.
Exactly.
I think it was one of the quickest throw rates of any quarterback in the league that day. Kirk, where the hell did that come from on a Monday night? The man's supposed to be crap on Monday nights.
Yeah, and it's like, so again, you need that sort of slot receiver who separates himself quick. We've got guys like that. So they'll have read the tape. They're that good. They will come up with ways to try and counteract it. But that's how you beat them. Just keep finding ways, keep using all your assets, and eventually you will find a way. And you might not get a lot of success early, but eventually, because I feel like in a lot of the times they've lost, it's been sort of third, fourth quarter points other teams have scored because they seem to have found a way around it and been able to keep themselves in the game. So that'll be what's critical for us. Probe, find a weakness, and then just like drive the hammer in.
Tom, anything to add on this San Francisco defense?
Yeah, so we talked about it a lot already. I don't think it's as simple as winning with the pass or the run. And I'm not saying that anyone else here is saying that too. For me, not to oversimplify, but we've got to win on first and second down. And the reason being, you cannot afford to let especially this interior pass rush just pin their ears back and go. And I think Jared Goff has a relatively underrated rep for pocket movement. That being said, when you've got Armstead and Hargrave, who admittedly has not been maybe as good the last couple of years, but I think has been one of the most underrated interior defensive linemen for the last 6 or 7 years. If they pin their ears back and get after what is probably the weakness of our certainly offensive line, but potentially our offense overall, I don't think it's going to go well for us. I don't think we can win the game with lots of third and longs. And we are all big Ben Johnson fans, but at times during the regular season, some of the play calling on first and second down was a bit vanilla at times. We can't afford to let that happen. And I think it works the other side of the ball as well, is we need to win first and second down on offense, and we need to win third down on defense. And it sounds slightly cliched, but if we think back to where the Lions have succeeded this year and failed this year, a lot of it comes down to that. And I only think it's accentuated when you play a team which has this depth of talent. And the way they are lined up, especially with that defense, if we aren't moving the ball on first and second down, and we end in, it's not even third and longs, it's third and five, third and six, that's not snaps I want. We need to be controlling those first and second downs. So that's the biggest thing for me. I feel like whether it's the run or the pass, and I didn't watch that Vikings game, I can't tell you how they controlled the clock. I think if we are moving the ball early and we are getting kind of second and mid, second and shorts, third and shorts, I think we got a great chance to make this a brilliant game. If we don't move the ball on first down specifically, we become slightly more one-dimensional. You can't have Jahmyr Gibbs in the background on third and nine and expect him to be getting first downs again and again, however kind of fantastic a playmaker he is. So for me, that's what it comes down to. It's win on first down and just don't give this San Francisco defense a chance on third and eight to pin their ears back and go after Jared Goff.
Yeah, Ant's just put it in the chat and it's in our Discord as well. But Debo practiced today. He is going to be active by the look of it, although the question is whether his shoulder can take a heavy amount of contact. So basically, hit him is the order of the day.
There's no way he was going to take all that jip from CJ and not play.
No, like, yeah.
It's his pride at stake here. It was never a question of whether he'd play or not. It's like, he's not going to let CJ come to the stadium and start getting the big one because he's on the sideline in clothes. So.
Yeah.
What are they like against special teams, your team? Because, you know, we love the old good trick play and stuff in there. It's, you know.
Well, we go back and forth with this because sometimes it can be pure poo emoji. But then there's other times where it can go out there and win us the game. You know, it not the season just gone, but the season before, it beat Green Bay. It literally beat Green Bay.
And that was a terrific win, by the way. We appreciate that. Like, they were so cocky going into that.
That was something else. That was absolutely unreal. I've never cheered a blocked kick so much in all my life.
Yeah.
And then just looking around, Hufanga's looking for the ball. I'm like,
Packers special teams tend to beat themselves.
I was about to say, because they had a block kick last week, which effectively won the game as well. So I just wanted to get on to the Packers game, actually, very briefly, because I got a load of notes, but they're all a bit useless, I think. At the end of the day, I watched that game and I thought, well, we've got a great chance here, because if Purdy plays like this, then you should be winning. And yet, we know that Purdy has small hands, not unlike our own quarterback. And, you know, that he really just struggled in the rain. Or do you see it another way? Or was that really just what happened?
No, he did. I mean, he started the game with the glove, obviously didn't like it. The rain was starting and stopping. I was texting a friend who was there and she said it was horrible. But then she's from California, so she thinks like 20 degrees Celsius is cold. It's like, no, I'm Welsh. That's sunbathing weather. What are you talking about? That's nice.
And of course, the weather for this game is sunny and 21 and a half degrees, so no trouble.
Exactly. So I've been looking on how much the chance of rain is going to be. It's down to 0% chance of rain, but that's the BBC, so pinch of salt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So the Green Bay missed a 41-yard field goal, even though they had really good special teams plays. Nixon had a 73-yard return where he fumbled the ball, but still scored a touchdown as a result of it. Really just mad game. I mean, did you come out of it, Nick, feeling like you kind of stolen one a little bit?
I came out of that physically and emotionally drained.
See,
in every part. And I should try
being a Lions fan.
No, I'm all right.
See, that's that. You know, that game came down to that Jordan Love throw, his first pick. Yeah. Like any other slightly veteran quarterback would not make throws like he did in those two situations. They were really bad, and that's where it turned again. Defense turned it. When they needed a pick, they got pressure on him. They forced a rookie into a stupid throw. Obviously, that's the one thing that Jared's gotten really good at recently is that when he is under, he just knows when to throw it. He knows when to toss it. He's been very good with his ball security. But
he knows when to pitch it behind him.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But again, this is going back to the 49ers defense. They exploited the fact that they got a rookie in there, put them under pressure. Well, yeah. You know, they forced the mistake out of him, which got them in that game. So you've got to be incredibly disciplined against this team. Like, just, you know when your cause is lost. Throw it. Don't try force it, because that's when you get your picks, when you try and force it. It's just not going to work. So that's why I came out with it there. The Packers did defeat themselves a little bit, but again, the 49ers forced them into making those mistakes. So it's a little bit of both.
Yeah, we were definitely the second best team. As I said to you before you started recording, I was in no fit state come the end of the game. I think I was about 30 sheets to the wind at that point, to be honest with you. I was hammered. I was done. My job is to book people in for ECGs. I very nearly logged in to book myself in. I was in a state. I was trying to text a mate. He's like, "You all right?" No. Like, you won. I know.
Yeah. I know. Not okay, though. I'm not okay. Nick, I want to come on to our a matchup that we haven't really spoken about with you in terms of how you feel about the Lions, because a lot of what you focused on is the Lions offense. And we actually had a question from Brent DeWitt talking about a particular player on the Lions defensive line who is getting a little bit of buzz nationally, maybe for the first time in his career, which is Aleem McNeil, our defensive tackle. And I don't know if you know a huge amount about him, but your run game is obviously fantastically dynamic. How do you feel like that matchup goes?
It's going to be a strange one. Like I said at the very beginning, it is all going to come down to how well your defense can shift from left to right. It's not about forward and backwards. It's left to right. Because the moment one of those players goes into motion, you've got Christy McCaffrey, who can start the play, stood 3 yards behind Brock Purdy. Halfway through the play call, he's all of a sudden to his right. Then he's making his way and he's splitting off as a wide receiver. How are the Lions defense going to deal with that? Especially then once you've got all that, then you've got another wide receiver is going to come around in front or just behind of the quarterback. Is he going to knock it up in the air? How are they going to do that? Are the linebackers going to jump in on that? I don't think it's one player specifically that's going to cause a huge amount of damage. That entire Lions defense is going to have to be phenomenal, because we have the players to take advantage at any point on this field. We can go long to Ayuk. We can go over the middle to Kittle or to Brandon Ayuk. And don't forget Juwan Jennings. You've got Juwan Jennings is known as third and one for a very good reason. And at the end of the Packers game, he went and blocked a player into the Gatorade. I kind of felt sorry for the poor girl manning it, because she took a bit of a sideswipe on the quiet there. But he's phenomenal. So if you want to shut down all of our main targets, that's fine, because Juan can go out and do it as well. We have
best blocking wide receivers in the league as well. Just fantastic. I know he said you blocked him into the Gatorade thing, but just generally speaking, I think one of our guys who wasn't here today, Ash, was on a show earlier on in the week with a 49ers guy, and he was you often see Trent Williams and him on the same side of the field, because as a tandem, they're fantastic.
They are. They're absolutely unreal. You're talking about a team, the wide receivers are very told day one, probably actually before, you don't block in this scheme, you will not play. Brandon Ayuk found himself in the doghouse very early on in his tenure with the Niners, because his blocking wasn't quite up to scratch. once he figured out how to block, and now he does like a beast, all of a sudden he's taken off. You know, Shanahan is rewarding him with targets and yards, because Shanahan is an absolute freaking genius when it comes to that ball. You talk about a man who has been around football since before he could walk. You know, it's bred, it's in his blood. His father's won Super Bowls. He's been, you know, it's insane how, what that man can do with a football. He's sitting there dreaming up plays. I think he struggled a bit with Trey, clearly. They ended up getting rid. But I'm not too worried about a single player. Like I say, it's going to be the unit as a whole. They have to play together. The linebackers cannot go abandoning their posts, because Brock will just put it over the middle and we'll destroy you with mid-range all game. Fine, we'll take it every single time. And then will come the whole, Brock Purdy can't throw long. That'll be the narrative that comes out. But then if we start hitting you with the run game, we can force your defense in, bring them towards, send Brandon. Hulk it long, because that man, his arms are ridiculously long. I've never seen them, a man with such long arms in my life. And he can go and get that ball. It's really underrated with him. He's a fantastic wide receiver. He's a better pure wide receiver than Deebo Samuel is. It's just that Deebo Samuel can do everything. Yeah. Yeah, you're looking at a fullback a wide receiver in a fullback's body that can play running back as well.
It's a special combination. And Lisa DiLorenzo just said about the blocking quote. She said, that sounds like a Dan Campbell quote, Nick. And actually, it was very much quoted here as well. We have been preaching it since day one as a totem of this team. If you can't block, you can't play on the wide receiver side. So that very much shines through us as well. And the similarities between the two offenses is really palpable to me. Do any of you three guys think that the 49ers run offense versus our run defense is decisively one way or the other? Do you think it is an advantage for someone?
I think it's an advantage for us only because we're better placed than the majority of other teams. And San Francisco have had their way with so many other teams. So that's not even say our run defense is better than their run offense. I don't believe it is. But I just think you've been able to control so many games with that scheme and with that run offense so far this year. And I just think it will be harder for you to do that versus us than some other teams. So that's the only way I see it as a matchup advantage, but not even that we have a better run defense unit than your run offense, if that makes sense.
So Tom's right here in that we just have far too big a sample size this year of the run defense being good. Like, not one single rusher has more than 70 yards on us this year. And that is over however many, nearly 20 games now. And CMC is not the only great running back in the NFL who we come up against. He's a really good one, but, you know, we have to take the sample size. I think we've come up against some fantastic offensive lines. We've come up against some fantastic running backs. And every time we've found a way to keep them in check. So you would, for us, this is going to be the hardest test of them all, but they're battle-hardened over a year now. And Glenn specifically recently has been very good with his scheme, keeping this sort of stuff there. And then you come to us, and that's where our advantage is we have two ways of hitting you. Like, we can run it through the middle or we can hit the edge because we've got two specific guys to do it. And if one way doesn't work on a day, we just go with the other guy. So it's close, like on both sides of the ball, but I just, you know, you don't say it often against these guys, but I think we more have a bit more, little bit more versatility there if the main way doesn't work. But, you know, when you don't give up a single 70-yard rusher an entire season, that's a good sample size enough to say you're pretty confident that the guys can go out there and do their job, especially as we've got our stud DT in now.
I think we've talked about all the other ways that this game's going to go in terms of pass offense, pass defense, run offense, run defense. I'm just going to skip over talking about key matchups because we've just done it already. So let's talk about more about any sort of specific matchups you guys are looking forward to in this game. And to lead off, I think that the one I'm looking at, the one that I think is going to decide the game, is Sewell versus Chase Young. Because I really feel like if the Lions are going to win this game, that is how it's going to happen in terms of dominating the clock and the game script, as Tom talked about. I don't feel like Chase Young is who we thought he might have been. And on a team where everyone is seemingly better than where he's been, even with the Washington front four, which was fantastic, that he hasn't really elevated himself this season at the 49ers, that he's merely good. And I think we can exploit that. And behind the best tackle in football per PFF, certainly the best right tackle in football by the eye test, by anyone, surely, that we love running it that way anyway. And with the left guard out for us, seemingly running it to the left has to take a back seat, and we just have to kind of go where our strength is. So if Sewell can run over Chase Young, maybe that's the key to winning the game for me. I don't know about the rest of you guys, about that specific matchup or any others you want to bring up in terms of where you're really looking at things. There's one other for the 49ers defense that I'm looking at, but I'll bring that up in a bit.
I mean...
I mean,
the special teams is going to be big here, because against both Tampa and LA, we've been able to win the field position battle because we've put them in some really, you know, when the offense hasn't done its thing, we've put them in some really bad situations. And even though we've given up yardage, because they're always so far back, we're able to adjust on drives and to able to stop them from developing into anything much bigger. Like on both sides of the ball, we have done really well when it comes to controlling field position. And in a game like this, that's huge. You know, you need to be able, you've got to be on your best form with it. So that's certainly going to be something, and it helps us. Again, drive stall out, put them back. Defense is red hot at the minute. It can help you. You can get better field position out of that. Our offense does better. You know, we've scored a lot of our points from advanced field positions because of what the guys have done beforehand. So that's going to be huge in this.
I'm not worried about Chase Young. For me, it's about how we keep Bosa away from our QB. And just going back, I'm not worried about our run defense. I think we've got that. But if the 49ers can put pressure on Goff, for me, that's the key to victory. So if our O-line can stay solid, and I think Sewell against Chase Young in terms of us running the ball, he's going to run him over. It's just the pass protection that I'm concerned about.
I'm going to come in here and just... I've been corrected by the chat. So Nick Bosa plays 70% of the time on that side of the ball, 30% on the other time. So it will more often than not be Sewell versus Bosa. Still feel like that's an advantage for the Lions in the run game. I don't think Bosa's been fantastic against the run this year. I think he's been good, but clearly pass rushing, I think, is... He's better.
That's going to be a spicy matchup.
Penny was bodying two guys on his own in the last game. And like that is against a really good Tampa defensive line. He was doing 2-on-1 and winning. So it's not a shame to say he's the best right tackle in the league and there's not an edge rusher who can stand up to him. Like that is a boast, but it's one that he's backed up all year long. There's been very few people who've been able to stand up to him. And he's faced some of the very best. Like we've faced two really good defensive lines in the playoffs so far, and we've managed to minimize the damage. Like, so we've played against Aaron Donald, played against Vita Vea, we've played against some fantastic players. So I just trust the entire line. I do. They're executing really well. They're running the ball really well. Like, they're our strength, and we should be confident in them.
And again, if we're going purely off matchup, I mean, if Nick Bosa has 3 sacks at the weekend, I don't think any of us would be surprised. He's a special, special player. That being said, from a pure matchup standpoint, I prefer Sewell against someone like Bosa than I would against someone like Parsons. And that's purely just a play style thing from in terms of what Sewell does well and what he maybe is not so good on. So I would rather have a more traditional player like Bosa or a traditional edge than someone who's more of a speed turn the corner guy like Parsons. So I think I'm pretty sure it was Sewell's first ever game was against Bosa, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he obviously did okay then. I mean, it's small sample size, but again, I would take Sewell versus a more traditional edge than I would against some of these slightly more agile edge rushers like a Parsons, who's just a slightly different, not better, just different animal to someone like a Bosa.
I'm looking at it from obviously the slightly other way around. Very similar to yourself, Matt, but I'm looking at it as how is Aiden Hutchinson going to affect the game rather than you guys. I haven't seen a lot of this young kid coming through. I saw him obviously in college. He was he was brilliant in college, fantastic to watch, and he's having a really good start. But I want to see how he goes up again. If they're going to line him up against Trent Williams, then he's going to be an absolute non-factor in this game.
He'll play on the other side. So that was going to be my one. Was against, is it McKivitz? Is your
right it'll tackle? Be McKivitz, who's not, he's not great. He's not been horrific. He does need help, and which is where you'll probably see a lot of Kittle motioning to be alongside him. And at that point, all of a sudden, I have no issue with anyone that's coming at Kittle, because Kittle can deal with any edge rusher in the game. The man practices against Bosa 5 days a week.
Yeah.
You know, you iron sharpens iron.
I mean, I imagine you leave Trent Williams on an island because he's Trent Williams.
Oh, God.
And you motion Kittle, you chip with Kittle, and ultimately Hutch. And he's been superb, especially the last 4 to 6 weeks. But he's not someone who wins quickly, necessarily. He's not someone who's going to flatten and get to the quarterback in a second and a half, like some of these kind of really freaky guys, like a Bosa at times, like a Garrett, like these kind of guys. So I think with the extra attention, which ultimately he has faced all year, because this Lions defensive line doesn't have the playmakers along, kind of, especially on the edge, let's say, other than Hutch. I think with the chips that he's going to have to face with, he's not going to be getting home quickly. However, he can absolutely still impact the game. He has all year. And for me, that's really the biggest battle of any of this, is if he can impact the game, knowing what Trent Williams is going to do on the other side. If you can disrupt that passing game, then it becomes very different. If he can't, I struggle to see a world that even if we're sending five, we're sending six, we're sending DBs, it's going to be enough. I don't think we can trust the rest of our guys to generate enough pressure on a kind of snap-to-snap basis that we're going to be able to slow that San Francisco offense down. So that's, for me, it's the biggest kind of one-on-one, or maybe not one-on-one because of obviously the help I'm sure McKivitz will get. But to me, that's the biggest matchup out of any out here.
And I mean, the thing about Hutch as well is he had a really strong start to the season, kind of went and disappeared in the middle of it. And then he's had the strongest run into a season for a defensive end this year. I mean, he's had 8 sacks in the last 4 games. So, you know, he's on an absolute tear. And he's always preached, I get better the colder it gets. And actually in 20-degree weather then, maybe that's not so great for him, but you know, he seems to have hit a run of form, boys.
Yeah, he is the hottest edge player in the NFL right now. And as Nick was saying about iron sharpens iron, he has to go up against Penei Sewell every single snap of his life, who was one of the best tackles in the NFL, period. And you've kind of seen that play off recently. His technique's so much better. Like, the relentlessness seems to be, it's always been there with him, but just seems to have refined his technique a bit, and now he's getting home. And he's confident. Like any player, when you're getting sacks, you are confident. And he has taken the game by the scruff of the neck for us. His plays have won us the 2 playoff games, essentially. He's come up with plays which have defined the end of the games, which have won it for us. So the trench warfare is going to be insane in this one, just across the line, man on man. Yeah. Like... That's where you win. This is why you draft trenches. It wins you a Super Bowl. And whoever goes out of us two, it's because we're going to have the best set of lines in the NFC. So
I have one more matchup I want to bring up that I mentioned earlier. And it's, I think he's former Michigan, but maybe I'm completely imagining it. But cornerback for San Francisco, Ambry Thomas. Is he former Michigan?
Yeah, he is indeed.
He has had a rough few games, I would say. And he seems to be on the field a lot when defensive pass interference gets called. And if I'm matching him up with someone in terms of where I think your cornerbacks are going to go, I think you're right about Ward on Amon-Ra. It means that Ambry, when he's on the field, is going to be picking up either Reynolds or Jameson Williams, potentially. Either of which, strength or speed-wise, I think is going to give him problems. So how do you think that's the place that the Lions are going to kind of go after? Because he's feisty. He will make the plays too, but he seems to be a bit of a liability sometimes as well.
He can be. He will give up those long flag plays, 1, 3rd and long. They do happen. They do seem to happen with him. But that's if he starts. Because we've got Diamador Lenore, who can go and play at corner as well. So he could always go like, and Lenore's having a very good little season. He's been shifted about. He's been a victim of his own versatility because he can play the nickel so well. We lost K1 Williams. All of a sudden, we needed that nickel player, particularly for our scheme. And unfortunately, that's where Lenore ended up sliding in. I think the team hoped that Sammy Womack III would come in and be that guy so that they could shift Lenore to the corners to be that opposite for Treverius. It hasn't really happened that way, and that's why you've had to see a lot more of Ambry Thomas. He does concern me sometimes, but then he can make plays. He can have an awful game, but then he'll come up with some amazing play, stop a clear touchdown that's going in, or something will happen. You know, he's got good in him as well.
Right, I'm going to come on to the way you think the game is going to go and the score prediction. And when I tee someone up for that, I will just take two and then I'll be back for the end. So I'll go with Tom first. How do you think the game is going to go and what is your score prediction for this one? And then we're going to go into some listeners' questions. So if you have any questions you want us to take, please don't forget to at the channel so that I can see it when I come back and we'll get those in. Tom, the floor is yours.
So I see the Lions taking the ball first, as we've seen them do continually over the last however many games. And even if the Niners win the toss, they're going to defer. I see us going three and out nice and early, getting everyone a little bit rattled. But then from that point settling in, I think the Lions do start winning on first and second down. The Niners obviously are going to move the ball at the same pace. Ultimately, I think it comes down to the fourth quarter and it's not even who makes mistakes. I think it's who makes the plays. And so I'm going to go for the Lions 31-28. It could absolutely go both ways. I struggle to see a world that the Lions blow the Niners out. I can see a world the Niners blow the Lions out. But I'm going to trust the guys who I think have bounced back a number of times this year and even in previous years when things have gone against them. So I think it's going to be a real test of character. My biggest fear for this game is not losing, actually. It's all the positivity and excitement that we've had gets lumped and scapegoated onto one person, whether that's Goff, whether that's someone else. I just think that'd be a really disappointing way to end what's been an incredible year. So I could see it going a whole variety of ways, but I think the Lions will take it 31-28.
You go next, Steve.
I think the Niners will go out to an early lead, probably score the first touchdown. And I think we'll kind of trail by sort of, you know, by one score for most of the game. I think we'll level up at some point in the round, start the fourth quarter. And then I think it'll be down to, as Tom said, who can make the play. I think nightmare scenario is that the Niners take the lead and then, you know, Goff's rattled and Goff throws a pick six and then we're down 14 and then we start like changing the way that we play and start being over aggressive. And for me, that's the only way that we're going to get blown out. If we go down by two scores early doors and then it kind of like unravels from there. But I think we're going to be in it all the way through. I think this is going to come down to the last 2 minutes. And I mean, it's a coin flip game for me, and I'm going to predict we take it 27-24. But I think it's going to be a really enjoyable game to watch.
So whatever,
as you said, the trenches are going to be awesome to unpick.
Yeah, the O-line and D-line guys are going to be drooling over this one for years. Oh, yeah. I feel like it's going to be that sort of game. Just let us know in the chat what you think. Give us your predictions and we'll read them out as well. But we'll break this in half. So we've had two of us. So, Nick, you go in the middle with the filling of 49ers and then we'll finish off with some more Lions.
Well, any Niners fans watching will know one thing about me. I don't do score predictions. Because I jinxed the team. It is quite that simple. I have jinxed the team far too many times. I refuse to be the reason we lose. I am horrifically superstitious. I have everything lined out exactly what I'm going to do Sunday. But no, Niners will have the ball to start. Niners will score a touchdown and they will not relinquish the lead again for the remainder of the game. However, the Lions will not get blown out. This will be less than a 5-point win.
It's gonna bless you. It's going to be incredibly tough. This is it's I think it's going to be a really good game. I feel like there's a hint of destiny about this, and I don't believe in this stuff, but it just feels like this Lions team this year, there's something there with them. Like, you get this when the scrappy underdogs sort of going all the way to a final and wins it all. I have this aura about them. Dan's been setting this team up for the last 3 years to be aggressive. Like, all the fourth down conversions or attempts, you know, not going for field goal, going for points, putting his team in high-pressure situations. Even on defense, he does it. And I feel like it's all manifested to this moment, because if we're going to win this, we're going to have to be aggressive. We're going to have to go for it on third downs, fourth downs. We're going to have to steal plays, keep their offense off the field, keep their defense on it, keep them going, be relentless with it. And we'll live or die by that sword. But I've seen us do it in the playoffs now, and I just think that people are sleeping on us. I think we set out well. We've got the run game to be able to control the clock. We've got the receivers to be able to go out there and make plays if the run game doesn't quite work. We're just so dynamic in what we do, and the defense is red hot. We've got the best edge rusher in the league right now. We've got one of the best run defenses in the league. Yeah, we're going to get burned in the back, but we can deal with it. So I think we're going to win as well. I think it's going to be something like 30-26. It's going to be one score, but this Lions team just feels inevitable this year, and I think they can go and do it.
Since I missed it very briefly, and you said 30-21, Steve, what did you say?
30-26, I said. I'm not winning out by 9 points. No, sorry. I did not say that, Nick. I promise.
Sorry.
30-26. Oh, your DMs are about to get spicy.
Steve, what did you say?
Lions 27-24.
Tom, what was it?
I said 31-28. I actually meant 27, because I think we're going to need a couple of turning sevens and threes, but yeah.
And Nick said 27-24 to the 49ers, so he's jinxed it.
Yes, it's recorded. I did not say that.
Yeah, no, I did. I did hear Nick. I came in as soon as he said, "I don't do score predictions. I jinx Never the team." Have. And I'm just wondering how I can reverse jinx it. I said to Nick, I struggle to see sometimes the way that the Lions can win this game. And the more we've talked about it, the better I feel about it. And that's really scary to me. Because we do so well what we need to do to win this game. And I've gone back and forth in my head. Part of me has wanted to say, I think the Niners are going to win this game. Because, well, shouldn't everyone think the Niners are going to win this game? Like, they are the number one team in the league. They're the number one offense in the league. They are a feisty defense, not ranked particularly highly in some aspects, but whatever, they're still really good. I can't bring myself to pick the Niners, even if I'm trying to be unbiased. Like, I'm really trying. But I don't just think we're going to win this game. I actually think we're going to win this game and go to the Super Bowl. And that's really scary. So in summary of kind of where I think the game's going to go, I think we're going to have joy running the ball. And it's not just because that's what everyone said we need to do to win the game. But I genuinely just think that this is the game where Campbell kind of goes into the toolbox with Hank Fraley and the run game coordinator and says, we're having the ball for 45 minutes. Let's just do it. And just barely pass the ball. You know, some of those games you have in winter where someone passes the ball like 10 or 12 times. Like, I really think the Lions could go so heavily in the run game that it almost beggars belief. I think the Lions go for 250 on the ground. And it could be really close in terms of score and just kind of low scoring, because you're talking about like 18 play drives for the Lions or something like that. But the 49ers can't get off the field. They're really struggling on third down and in the red zone. So why can't we just march? And then all it takes is a stop here or there. Or my guy coming up with a game-sealing pick in Ifeanyi Melifonwu, who I've been on the train for, and there is evidence for me calling for him to get more snaps when he was a bit part player in this season. I'm going for my guy, Ife, to get a game-sealing pick by a score. I'm going to go 24-17, Lions.
And to annoy yeah. Jeremy, we're going to get a flea flicker in this as well. I did last time. The last time I predicted a flea flicker, we did it. They're gonna go into the toolbox for this one. They are really going to dig into the toolbox.
The other thing that I kind of saw from the 49ers, Nick, is they kind of struggled to defend what the 49ers do well, which I thought was weird because he must defend it all the time, which is the sort of end arounds.
Yeah.
End arounds seem to give you real trouble.
It's been defense all year has been our issue. If our defense was playing like a number one defense, hell, I couldn't see past us not winning by at least 20. But we are vulnerable on D. But there are the players that will come up with those with the plays. And like I said, last week has given me that confidence that we can play poorly and we'll win.
All right.
Go on.
No. I thought you finished. So I was going to go on to the next thing. If you wanted to say one more thing, go for it.
No, sorry. No, you go for it.
Let's go for some questions in the chat. So Mike the Marine had the first couple. We've got one from Lisa DiLorenzo, and then we've got one from Grandizer as well. If you've got some questions for us, get them in. We'll ask them of the panel. Mike first said, I think in parentheses, I'll say, because this game seems like it's going to be back and forth on offense, can you see this game being decided by who scores first rather than last?
No.
All right. No. We'll move on from that question. Mike also said, for your guest, what percentage likelihood do you think he will win the game? Which is different than the score prediction, I guess. Okay. I don't think you're jinxing the team.
I'll give that. Yeah, okay. I'm probably teetering around about 70 to 75%. Hmm.
Team rankings has us at 30%, so that figures. That seems fair. Mike Marine also
this,
says...
This reminds me of when Paul Gascoigne said, I never make predictions and I never will.
Oh, if you don't know who Paul Gascoigne is in the chat, go look him up. He's a spectacular character of English football history. Mike also said, guys, do you think Houston plays, as in James Houston? He's been fit for an entire week. Again, despite being inactive last week, he's had 3 full weeks of practice without being limited.
Yeah, he does. I think they saved him specifically for this. Don't
Me
fire
too. I think he was ready last week. I reckon they saved him.
Yeah, because you need him here. Like, a guy like Trent Williams, the only way you're really going to beat him, if he can get some of his elite bend that he does... Like, that yes, would be a way that you'd be able to get
a 6'1" guy that he just can't reach down to.
Yeah, exactly. But he does. he like runs parallel to the ground. If you can get him some favourable matchups there, or at least keep him busy, because he is a handful, and then against all the motion stuff as well, you need the quicker guys in. They've saved him for this week.
I was watching some Houston's highlights earlier, and how much he reminds me of Von Miller. Sometimes is just uncanny in terms of the way he kind of rushes. Just the low center of gravity and the ability to keep moving quickly low to the ground is ridiculous.
I always go back to the triple team he beat against Buffalo. Like, he beat the tight end, the right tackle, and the running back in the same play and got a sack. It's like, not many players do that.
Lisa DiLorenzo also asked us, did you all hear that they were chanting the Jared Goff chant at the Red Wings game against against Philadelphia? Because that was ridiculous.
It's better than what they're chanting for the basketball team.
Hey now.
Aren't they trading for LaVine?
Nothing's confirmed. Basically... You're the worst team in the league, and you're like, yeah, we're not going to get rid of any of our players, but we're going to be really active at the deadline. It's like, cool, we'll just hold on to all of those players doing so well for us.
Grandizer also asked, who do you think will be the player of the game for your respective team if your team wins? So pick an MVP for yourselves.
Brian Branch.
Like that, Tom, like that.
Jack McQuaid. Joking.
Oh. It's Jake anyway. You ruin your own joke.
Well, you know what I mean.
His lesser known younger brother we've signed to the practice squad who also long snaps.
Yeah, there you go. You know what? We've not mentioned him a single one in this, but I think it'd be J-Mo. Like, if J-Mo could be the MVP here, because no one's talking about him. He's the deep threat guy. He's the one where you can really break this defense open. So I think this is perfect but to be JMO's career game.
Aiden Hutchinson. I think Hutchinson is going to be absolutely psyched for this.
Brandon Ayuk, your team is going to be so concerned about CMC, they're going to forget about him and he's going to go off 100 plus yards.
Since you're so concerned that you're putting cornerback one on Amon-Ra St. Brown, I'm going with Sam Laporta. The guy half a leg on one of his legs, one and a half legs, he went off last week. He had the most targets on the team, the most receptions on the team, and he's unable to walk without a brace. Yet he's still just racking up ridiculous numbers. So if you put everything on Amon-Ra, you're going to get burned.
I'll make a prediction. An Iowa Hawkeyes tight end will have the best game out of these. Because that's just open-ended then. I'll be right either way.
That's a bold prediction.
I like it.
Bob O'Lan asks whether Zach Ertz is going to be suited up. There is a quote which we had in our Discord channel about Zach Ertz. Oh, Journey's performing at halftime, which is fun. Zach Ertz, per Jeremy Fowler from ESPN, he said, who arrived days ago, told me that coaches have thrown the whole playbook at him. He's hopeful the crash course helps him get elevated from the practice squad for the title game, but no word on that yet. I think we all thought that the route to Ertz getting on the field was potentially limiting the playbook for him, getting him to know some of the stuff we do, and then putting him on the field for that. But that news would suggest that they are fully invested in him getting out there, because if he didn't think he could take it, you wouldn't do it.
I mean, he's an intelligent guy. You're looking at a Stanford graduate there. That might, if anyone's going to be able to digest the playbook quickly, it's going to be a Stanford lad. He's hell of a player. He's been there. He's done it. And you've also got a man who's played against the 49ers twice this year.
And I guess if you're looking at the room, having Kabinda and Skipper in there, you need someone who's a bit more receiver orientated. Because we've got the blocking guys in, but I mean, this could be the Dan Skipper touchdown game. Who knows?
Oh, please!
I mean,
please.
Happy. Just leak him out into the backfield on one play, and just there you go. That would like sum up the season, wouldn't it? Dan Skipper touchdown takes us to the Super Bowl. Nobody predicted that.
But the really weird thing about the Lions is they love their tackle touchdowns, because Decker's caught more than one in his career, I think.
Well, when the refs give them.
Why not a Sewell touchdown? Sewell has not scored an offensive touchdown.
No, he's not. He won us a game last season.
Yes,
he did.
That was
one of the most famous photos of all time.
What else do we have here? Grandizer always comes out with some really good questions. Although on IR, Grandizer is going to be really obvious for the San Francisco 49ers, because there's only really one guy that's there. Rookies. How was your rookie class?
Not bad,
Nick.
Not bad. Obviously, we didn't get to pick in the first round because that was the last time we'd ditched a pick for Trey Lance. But Jair Brown's come in and he did take a knock. He's had to sit a game. Ryan came in we picked him up from the Bucks. Well, I say we picked him up from the Bucks. We actually called him whilst he was on holiday. He was on a cruise because he didn't have a team this year at that point. But Jair Brown has been really, really good. Been really happy with him. Moody has taken a lot of stick, but he's actually only missed one field goal. He's been near enough perfect. So the wind will be down as well, because he does like to keep it close to that right post. That man knows how to pull on my heartstrings. I'm pretty happy with it. I mean, you're looking at a team that when we drafted, we weren't looking for starters. We were looking for players to develop for next year, the year after. There really weren't any holes. The only start on job available was kicker.
When you say missed, do you mean, are you excluding blocked? Because he's missed four field goals.
There was a lot of those were preseason. You sure?
One extra point, four field goal. 21 of 25.
It was the first week he missed a extra point conversion.
Okay. Mike the Marine asks, how many times do we use Jumbo 6-0 line? It felt like we were going to use it a lot last week, and there was one snap of it.
Bound to come out at least once or twice.
It's a bit too obvious in a lot of situations, isn't it? But I mean, with us, a lot of times we're going jumbo, we lead the tight end out and throw it. So I don't know. You never know.
I really want to see the play that we did against the Rams, the jumbo set with no wide receivers and then split everyone out, because it's just the most pretty play I've seen this year in terms of play design and just getting Sam LaPorta on a defensive end in coverage. It's chef's kiss. I'm going to miss Ben Johnson.
Only two jobs left. It might not lose him yet.
I kind of feel like he's got one on already, though. Like, there's a reason why there's still two jobs open and Bill Belichick is still out there.
And Vrabel.
Bill's on the decline and we all know it. Like, he's not been that good the last few years.
Vrabel screams defensive coordinator somewhere to me rather than head coach.
Yeah, and Vrabel sucked as a head coach the last few years. Like, he gets way too much credit for that team. They've regressed over the last 4 years. So, like, he's not a hot name at the minute.
All right, I don't see too many other questions. So I think we're going to wrap this one up because we've been going a while. Our live reaction show. Is there anything else anyone wants to bring up before we go, before I close it up? No. Okay.
I will say one thing. I am glad to see you lot back in your team. There's none of this, we're glad to be there, Bull. I'm glad to see it. There's too much of that happening. I've seen a lot of it on the internet the last couple of weeks where Lions fans, oh, this is our Super Bowl. No, the Super Bowl is a Super Bowl. You've got to get there. I mean, it's nice to see.
I just have one question. Where are the Cowboys? Oh, no, they're in Cabo. Yeah, I keep forgetting.
I was going to say just like one word answer. If our team wins, who do we want to play in the Super Bowl?
Chiefs.
Just so weird. They got Pat Mahomes.
Yeah.
Well, see, it's weird. In a way, you kind of want to. You don't want to play the Chiefs because if you beat them first game of the season, then losing the Super Bowl is bad. But like the Ravens, just I don't want to get blown out by them again. I just don't.
I'll just say this right now. There ain't no Super Bowl in history that's got an asterisk against it.
Well, I just feel that Lamar has got a bad game in him. I don't doubt the Ravens' defense, but I think Lamar's got a bad game in him.
See, you want the Chiefs' lines because you want like Eminem and Taylor Swift to have a battle between them. Like, you know. Yeah, just screw Usher. Like, get rid of Usher. Just get rid of Usher. Like, have Taylor and Eminem on there and just have them, you know, the whole world will be backing us.
Oh, my God. What a weird halftime show. Not screw Usher. Have all three of them. Just have Usher bring them on as guests. What a show.
Yeah, as long as Jason Kelsey's at the front, shirt off, chugging beers. Like a hero.
Might be the moment of the playoffs for me. That, actually. Kelsey's just great.
What, Kelsey, Kelsey v. Dan in a beer chugging contest? Like,
oh, yeah, I'm here.
After the game's done, we don't want Dan and Ibria during the second half of the Super Bowl, but
yeah, we do. It would be good content, in fairness.
I quite like to see Kelsey versus Brad.
Just go for it, fourth down. Dan, it's first down. Don't care, go for it.
I mean, Vrabel's not doing anything at the moment. Having him in that mix as well would be great. Vrabel versus Kelsey. I want to see it.
I was going to say, I couldn't quite think where Vrabel came into the half-time show.
Yeah, it's Taylor Swift, Eminem, and Vrabel. I mean, everyone can see that, right?
Oh, dear.
Oh, one for the ages.
I feel like that's a good point to finish off on there.
I think that'd be a good idea.
Let's do it there. Right, live reaction show this Sunday, 6:20 p.m. Eastern Time, 11:20 p.m. UK time. Me and Ash on the call. If you guys are watching it live, want to come on at halftime and give some thoughts or be on it the whole thing, whatever you want to do. But would love to, for such a historic game, have you guys come on and give some thoughts. Review show, as always, is going to be Monday evening for the San Francisco game. Win or lose, we'll be celebrating in one way or another, which is the only the only thing, Nick, I will say about that in terms of
we might be hammered if we win, but
I will still be drunk. I'm working, but I'm working from home, and they'll have no idea. I'll be D&D all day.
In fact, one thing I really quickly want to ask before I get out of it: what red are you on, Tom? Because like, I figure you like a Malbec guy. Is it Malbec or?
So honestly, this was not planned. It was actually a Californian Zinfandel. So it's almost like I'm drinking the blood of Californians.
Good lord, man. Was that about £3 a bottle?
Hey, have some respect. 4.5.
Oh god. Right. College Football Podcast talked about the Shrine Bowl this week. Go and check it out. Senior Bowl next week. All-Star Circuit is really hotting up. Draft is in Detroit. I know that we're in this right now. If you don't listen to it now, go and listen to it later on, because it's some really cracking stuff. Find us on Rural Alliance UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And the group for Worldwide Fans is Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pride Worldwide. Lots of really good stuff from there, from the guys going to the games, UK-based or otherwise. Some really good content on that. Website's rotluk.com. The event for the Super Bowl is on there. If you are UK-based, go and check it out, and then I'll send you some news through that. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us 5 stars on your podcast provider and all of that stuff. Would love to boost the show just a little bit more. Tom and Steve, thank you for doing this with me. Nick, it's been a pleasure, mate, to have you on again. Really looking forward to the next time. And good luck on Sunday. I'm not going to say, but not too much, because it's like, come on, let's be adults here. Yeah, wish you all the best, and we'll see you hopefully around draft time.
Indeed. I hope your hangovers aren't as bad as mine will be.
Can't promise anything. Guys in the chat, on the audio pod, it's been a heck of a season. Thank you for listening to us and our drivel all the way through it. We'll see you on the other side. Let's go, Lions One Pride.